6. Maddie stepped through the door first, Brewster following close behind. Their footsteps made a hollow sound as the twins stepped from the concrete floor of the storage space to the worn wooden floor of the backstage dressing room. Brewster stopped the door before it swung all the way closed. He and Maddie looked at the door, then at each other. Brewster grabbed a flimsy metal stand meant to hold an overturned top hat and wedged it in the doorframe to hold the door open. Maddie nodded her approval. As with most things one recalls from childhood, the dressing room felt instantly familiar, yet completely different from how they remembered it. The smell of dust, wood polish, and the dove cages cut more sharply into their nasal passages. The clutter of old props and costumes felt more chaotic and oppressive. And of course, everything seemed much smaller than it had when they'd last been there. Brewster said,
"We haven't stepped down at all, so we're not underground. We're still in the building."
Maddie nodded. "Looks like it." The twins stalked quietly around the room, examining everything they saw in greater detail than they usually would, though neither of them could have told you what they were looking for, nor why they felt the need to be so quiet. Maddie looked at the large round light bulbs surrounding the makeup mirrors, with their visible glowing filaments.
Ugh, Edison bulbs, so 10 years ago. They're so old they become outdated twice.
"So what do we do now?"
Brewster asked.
"We keep looking around. Hopefully we'll get an idea."
"That's your best plan?"
"Your best plan was to ask me what to do."
"I never said I had a better idea, just that yours wasn't good."
They slowly worked their way down the length of the dressing room and rounded the corner into the area beside the stage. The curtains hung open, allowing the twins to see the empty theater. They stepped onto the stage, looking out into the cavernous space. Brewster said,
"This room is too big to fit in this building."
"Some buildings look bigger on the inside. Or maybe it's one of those things where the whole floor slants down without you knowing."
"That doesn't seem likely."
"No, it doesn't."
Maddie shouted,
"Philip! What are you doing?"
Maddie shrugged. "We're looking for answers, right? Unless he left a written explanation lying around, we're going to have to talk to Philip. And we can't do that without letting him know we're here. So I figured I'd cut to the chase and shout for him."
"But he froze Mom and Dad. Just calling out to him like this seems risky."
"Calling out to him is risky. Not calling out to him is risky. Rushing around is risky. Wasting time debating it is risky. Doing anything is risky. And so is doing nothing. Playing it safe isn't going to help Mom and Dad. So what do you want more, to be safe or to get our parents back?"
Brewster gritted his teeth at his sister. Then shouted,
"Philip! You here, Philip?"
Both kids shouted Philip's name several times before deciding that he wasn't there. They walked down toward the seats, up the aisles and into the darkened lobby.
"The place is empty,"
Brewster said.
"Yeah, I guess there are no shows tonight. Maybe we should go out into the park? Maybe we can find an employee who can tell us where Philip might be."
They tried the front doors and found them locked, with no obvious way to unlock them. Maddie scouted around until she found an exit door. She unlocked it, and she and Brewster stepped out of the theater into an alleyway.
"It's dark out here,"
Maddie said.
"And cold."
Brewster said,
"We can't be outside. It was a lot brighter when we drove up a couple of minutes ago. We must be inside a building."
"Okay," Maddie said. "It's dark in here. And cold."
"And dirty."
A large pile of trash cluttered the alley, a great heap of rotting food, splintered wood, and hopelessly soiled fabric scraps. Unidentifiable fluids oozed from the pile and soaked into the gaps between the paving bricks. Putrid odors filled the twins' nostrils. Maddie stepped back, away from the garbage. Brewster moved closer.
"No plastic bags?" he said. "No straws? No drink cups?" "Oh, I guess if everything in the park's historically accurate, the trash would be too."
Maddie said, "Come on, we gotta go."
Brewster shook his head.
Still, you'd think one of the guests would toss out a gum wrapper or something. They could have deliberately put this trash here to make this street feel more real. I don't think they do that.
Brewster.
Why any theme park would include something like that, even if it's historically accurate?
Maddie said, we aren't in a theme park.
Brewster turned to face the same direction as his sister, out of the alley toward the street. The road stretched off until it seemed to vanish in the distance. The whole way down, horse-drawn carriages clattered, driven by men in hats. On either side of the road, brick and timber buildings crowded each other, filling the space with barely enough room left over for people to walk. The view looked much the same in the other direction, except that the road came to a fork, splitting off two ways and winding out of sight. The theater across the street disgorged a full house of patrons. Their clothing, facial hair, and what accents Maddie and Brewster could hear over the racket of hooves and wheels on the cobblestones all impeccably matched the surroundings. Above them, occasional clouds blocked the view of the stars. Not twinkling LEDs or glitter embedded in a painted ceiling. The stars were as they always appeared when viewed on a cold, mostly clear night, hours after sundown. Without a word, Maddie and Brewster looked at each other, then went back in through the exit door to the lobby of the theater.
What the hell is this? Maddie asked.
I don't know. This can't be real.
We're in London? In the past?
Looks like it, Maddie.
But that can't be right. Our parents are statues. Philip disappeared. We somehow, I don't know, transported from a moving car back to our house in time to see ourselves leave, and now we're in friggin' Victorian London. Either everything we've ever been taught was wrong, or I've lost my mind and I'm imagining this.
You haven't lost your mind.
That's reassuring.
I see all of this too, so maybe I've lost my mind and you're part of my hallucination.
Brewster, we can argue about which one of us is crazy later. We need to find out what's going on here.
Well, how do we do that? Your plan to confront Philip doesn't seem to have worked out.
Philip's not the only person around here who knows Dad.
Maddie stormed back out to the alley, Brewster following behind. They crossed the street, dodging the carriages and wagons, trying not to step in any horse droppings as they made their way to the theater that bore the marquee advertising The Great Gilbert and The Sensational Sid. Once they'd reached the opposite sidewalk, they made their way inside, pushing past the last few patrons trickling out onto the street. Maddie squeezed past a man in a black wool suit and bowler hat, and a woman in a gown that cinched tight around her neck and flared wide at her ankles. The twins drew their fair share of attention, more for barging through traffic than for their anachronistic clothing, but nobody tried to stop them or give them a hard time. Despite the different culture and historical period, London was still a city, and in many ways, all cities are the same. There is never a shortage of people dressed oddly. Indeed, openly gawking or acting uncomfortable is the greater infraction, as intolerance of other people's habits or tastes is a larger threat to the peace in an urban area than someone's outfit not looking quite right.
I'm not sure about this, Brewster said. These guys knew Dad, but they didn't seem to like him that much.
Maddie shrugged.
Yeah, but they didn't seem to like Philip much either, so if they aren't willing to help Dad, maybe they'll be willing to squeal on Philip.
Maddie, I don't think that logic works.
My logic has worked well enough to get us this far.
Is that a good thing?
The twins blended in with the hubbub, but only for a moment or two. As the final stragglers left, it became obvious that soon Maddie and Brewster would be the only ones remaining in the lobby, aside from the ushers, who would definitely tell them to leave. The kids bolted into the theater proper before anyone could even try to stop them. A couple of ushers in red velvet uniforms walked up and down the rows of seats. The closed curtains blocked any view of the stage.
The show's over, Maddie said. Where would the magicians be?
Brewster shrugged. Backstage, in their dressing room, I guess. One of the ushers said,
What are you two? Show's over, time to go.
Maddie said,
Yeah, we know. We're just looking for something.
What?
This.
Maddie replied and sprinted down the aisle toward a door, set into the wall next to the stage. Brewster followed her, and the ushers chased them.
Maddie cranked on the knob, yanked the door open, and lurched inside. Brewster followed, and the two of them pulled the door closed, bracing themselves against the door jamb, holding the door shut against the usher's attempts to open it, Maddie by pulling on the doorknob, and Brewster by pulling on Maddie's wrists.
"That's not really helping," Maddie grunted.
Brewster let go. Immediately, the door started to pull open.
"It was helping,"
Maddie yelped.
"It was helping."
Brewster grabbed her wrists and pulled. The door rattled, occasionally opening by a half inch or so, only to slam back as the twins tried harder to keep the ushers at bay. Beyond the door, the ushers shouted threats in increasingly harsher terms.
"What now?"
Brewster asked.
"We keep them out there while we stay in here,"
Maddie said.
"And after that?"
Maddie attempted to sound relaxed.
"Try to focus on the now. Live in the moment. You'll be happier."
"Not for long."
"See, that's what I'm talking about."
Without warning, the door stopped rattling. All conversation on the other side of the door ceased. Maddie and Brewster kept pulling. Brewster looked at Maddie, confused by their pursuer's apparent disappearance.
"It's a trick,"
Maddie said. The doorknob detached from the door. The twins staggered backward several steps to keep their balance. The door fell away like a large domino, making a deep whoomp as it hit the floor. Brewster let go, leaving Maddie with a doorknob in her hand. Instead of the theater, the space beyond the door jamb was a vast, black emptiness. A booming male voice said,
"Correct. It is a trick, a rather excellent trick. We are so very gratified that you've noticed."
The wall around the door frame also fell away from the twins, as did the brick walls on either side of them. They spun around to face whoever was addressing them, just in time to see the last remaining wall of the backstage area fall away and all of the furnishings, props, and rigging collapse into dust, which disappeared as if drifting on a breeze, leaving the two of them standing in a black void. Maddie shouted,
"Where are you?"
The voice said,
"Oh dear, our intruders can't see."
A second man's voice said,
"Yeah, well, of course they can't. It's bloody dark in here, isn't it?"
"Happily, we can remedy that."
With a sound like fingers snapping, only amplified hundreds of times, the world seemed flooded with brilliant white light. A glossy white floor and a matte white ceiling extended far into the distance, where they terminated not in walls, but with what looked like thin support posts. Very far away, Brewster and Maddie saw the slightest hint of people, many people, standing side by side in regularly spaced pairs, surrounding them. The twins shielded their eyes, a futile exercise as there was no one visible light source. Still, they peered into the distance, trying to get a better idea of who the people all around them might be.
"It looks as if they still can't see," the first voice said. "Perhaps we should bring things in closer."
"Yeah," the second voice agreed. "And if that doesn't work, get them some bifocals or something."
The support posts seemed to slide toward them without any sound or visible tracks. As they did, the distant people also appeared to approach, gliding forward faster than the posts without moving their legs or feet. It became clear that what appeared to be posts were in fact frames around large mirrors, and the people surrounding Maddie and Brewster were simply their own reflections. Some of the mirrors spun as they approached, turning to tuck in behind faster-moving mirrors and causing all of the reflections to move to one side or the other, offering the twins a kaleidoscopic view of themselves from every angle, standing together, looking frightened and confused. The mirrors stopped after closing to a 3-meter radius around the kids. Maddie and Brewster turned in opposite directions, looking for a way out, but found only their reflections. Maddie gritted her teeth and threw the doorknob as hard as she could at one of the mirrors, aiming at her own image as a guide. The knob and its reflection whizzed toward each other in a blur of motion. When they met, instead of an impact and the sound of shattering glass, the knob seemed to pass through each other.
Maddie had only a fraction of a second to recognize that the doorknob she'd thrown at her reflection was quickly approaching her real body. She turned to the left, shielded her head with her arms, and pulled her right leg up just in time for the knob to hit her hard on the side of her thigh with a dull thud. Maddie cried out,
"Ow! What the hell, man?"
The first male voice said,
"Your accents and vocabulary mark you as Americans. Your clothing suggests that you're visiting here from more than just a different country and continent. What do you want?"
Brewster said,
"We'd be happy to tell you, but first we want to know who's asking."
The mirrors began to spin, causing the twins' reflections to slide in and out of view. After a few spins, the mirrors slowed, but the reflections had changed. Now, instead of Maddie and Brewster looking alarmed and more than a little sick, two men appeared in the mirrors, both wearing black tuxedos, top hats, silk capes, and white gloves, with which they held black walking sticks with white tips. One had a well-oiled handlebar mustache, the other sported a mustache, a Van Dyke, and a monocle. The twins recognized the reflection surrounding them as the great Gilbert and the sensational Sid. The reflection of the magician with the monocle said,
"I am the renowned prestidigitator referred to in hushed, reverent tones as Sid. The well-dressed yet delightfully plain-spoken chap to my left is my associate and good friend Gilbert, but I suspect you knew that, as it is our theater in which you are trespassing. Now, who exactly are you?"
"I'm Maddie. This is my brother, Brewster."
Brewster added,
"Our parents are Martin and Gwen Banks. We met you once, about 6 years ago."
The magician's stern expressions melted away to astonishment. They both approached the kids. As they moved, so did their reflections. But as Sid and Gilbert stepped out of the mirror in front of the twins, their reflections disappeared from all of the others, replaced by a reflection of all four of the people in the room, standing together.
"You've gotten so big," Gilbert said, delighted.
"Yes," Sid said, "you're practically grown-ups. To us, it was only a couple of years ago that you interrupted our show."
"Sorry about that," Brewster said.
Gilbert said,
"Don't be. As I remember, the audience ate it up. How old are you now, if you don't mind me asking?"
16,
Brewster said. Sid shook his head.
"Time flies when it flows asynchronously."
"It does," Gilbert agreed. "It really does. How's your mum? It's been too long since we've seen Gwen,"
Maddie said.
"She can't move. She's frozen like a statue. Dad, too, and we don't know why. Or how it's even possible,"
Brewster said.
"That's why we're here," Maddie said. "We're hoping you can explain."
"Explain how your parents are frozen?" Gilbert asked.
"That, and everything else.
Including how you just did all these tricks with the mirrors."
Sid smiled.
"If I'm understanding you properly, and I flatter myself that I am, it's your hope that we can explain not only why your parents are stuck, but how their predicament and all of the other things you've experienced in getting here, including teleportation and time travel, is possible."
"Yes,"
Brewster and Maddie said in unison.
"Well, all right then. I'm pleased to report that we can, in fact, explain, as you say, everything else."
Gilbert said,
"Yeah, but it's going to take a while."
Sid nodded.
"As one might reasonably expect,"